Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show,
Monday through
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
From the Golden Gate to the New York Bay.
What I have access to is a bit different than the public.
Tamper with you.
Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Hamm,
Anthony Slater, and Fred Katz.
To be able to bring people together.
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was it right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
Try all you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Hey, baby, you don't know,
I tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened.
Here's your host, Sam Amick.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, NBA national writer at The Athletic. Here we have one, as always, guest, a host, Mr. Anthony Slater on the West Coast. We will soon be joined by Fred Katz, resident New York Knicks beat writer on the East Coast, but also a favorite of the show, a favorite in life in general, and one of the best sports writers on the planet, John Krasinski. What's up, my sir?
What's up, Sam? How's it
my
going?
Sir, who says that? I don't know what that was. Sorry. No. It's good, man. It's good to have you here. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Good to be here.
As always, enjoying your Minnesota Timberwolves coverage. And so on today's show, JK and Slater, we're going to make the rounds. We are going to, it's that time of year, February 9th. Trade deadline is coming up pretty quick. And as you guys know from getting to the arena on a regular basis, it is wild how quickly that aspect of the league starts really, really ramping up. We haven't seen fireworks yet from an actual trade standpoint, but, you know, the chatter, if you will, people talking pregame, you know, just the level of dialogue and the decibels is certainly going, you know, up quickly. And part of that is, and this is the focus of today's show, once we get past Lakers, which we are going to talk about in a minute, is the idea that you got all these teams that we thought were going to be kind of left for dead, that they were struggling so much early on, like the Timberwolves, like the Lakers, like a bunch of other squads, a ton of them in the West, but we'll talk East Coast too. And that impacts the trade market, right? Like you've got a ton of buyers and we got to figure out where the sellers are going to be. But before we get to all that, because it was in the news, you might have seen it. What a weekend. I did want to address my interview with LeBron James. We talked, today's Monday, so this was Saturday night. Lakers come to town. And I'll be honest with you guys, like I don't have the energy to get into this too much. This is, for me, it's in the it is what it is category. Respectfully with LeBron, he's got a long history of, you know, of saying things and then ultimately kind of backtracking. And I think it's not hard to read this room and realize that when we talked for about 2 minutes, and I think he, you know, he was fairly candid about the way he sees the Lakers roster and the general debate, which is kind of raging internally, externally right now about whether or not they should use their first round picks in 2027, 2029. This is a classic, like, present versus future situation with arguably the greatest player of all time. One of the greatest players of all time. And the idea that they're playing well enough, the Lakers are, five in a row heading into tonight's game in Denver, to where you can make a real argument that they should stop worrying about anything beyond the here and now. So that was the spirit of our talk. I would, you know, where I land on the fact that LeBron chose to tweet that he didn't agree with my characterization that his patience was waning, which is fine. I don't have any problem with him pushing back on the framing. I am for sure happy that I made the choice to, you know, the entire back and forth is in the piece, complete context there for everybody to read. And I think if you read it, you're going to get a real sense of where his head is at. I think that we also should say, you guys have done this a long time. This is just sports, but this is 100% politics. You know what I mean? Like this is a political ecosystem where my opinion is that once LeBron realized that he was maybe a little more candid than he had planned on being, he realized that there could be an impact on the leverage landscape as it relates to the Lakers and trade talks and the perceptions and the optics of the rest of the NBA world believing that, you know, the Lakers had their superstar frustrated. And so he obviously chose to to say what he said and say that his patience is not waning. But man, I wouldn't blame him, because that was honestly, I enjoyed the hell out of talking to him, and the spirit of it was, you know, and I don't normally pull this card, but this guy's incredible. And it's me telling him, man, you're 38, you're doing stuff that nobody's ever done before. If I was in your shoes, I'd probably be calling Lakers owner Jeannie Buss, you know, president of basketball operations, Rob Pelinka, and saying, let's go. What can we get for these two picks? You know, he obviously is deciding to say publicly that he's just focused on the team. So we'll see, you know, we'll see where that goes, but that's kind of how I see it. Thoughts, feelings, yeah. Opinions from you guys.
You know, I mean, sure. Maybe he didn't like the framing of patience, you know, particularly waning, because it's coming out when they're on a 5-game winning streak. How about urgency? Like, to me, that is the situation where it's just they've won 5 in a row, and I understand not wanting to have, like, you know, a theoretical negative story out there. But not only are they playing well, to me, what should bump their urgency up is, like, look at the West. Look at the mid-tier chunk of the West where everybody's sitting at 500. They're basically now in that clump. And then even above, like, Denver and Memphis are the 1-2 right now. They don't sit there as a traditional, like, how could the Warriors or how could the Lakers possibly topple them? Like, the West just seems like it's kind of soft.
It's right gettable. Now. I mean, yeah. They are 7.5 games back. I mean, they're not going to win the West, but just for context, they're 7.5 games back of the Nuggets. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and just even forget about standings. Like, to me, I'm even looking at it from a playoff perspective. Who looks like unbeatable, you know, sure, in a playoff series right now?
Right.
That's where I'm, and, you know, like, that's what LeBron would care about. That's what, you know, the Lakers should care about, because you can come out of the 6 or something like that.
Well, yeah. And to strip,
you guys are falling into the trap. You guys are doing exactly what they want you to do. You're falling into the trap.
They are. Well, let me introduce you, Fred. Nobody even knows you right now. I got to bring you in.
And then yes. Just chastises everyone. Wow. Okay.
Before we get to
the
great...
Sam, you should be lucky that I'm not fining you for this. Do you know how many dollars you have to get fined by getting quote tweeted by LeBron? I mean, that is... That is, you're going to be.
It wasn't a
you're
be
funding
quote
my life.
Fred,
I mean, I was political, you know, in true, you know, Lakers LeBron fashion. I was political at the top. I will strip a lot of the fat away and say, from a journalistic standpoint, like, come on, guys. Like, the last quote of the conversation was literally from 15 to 20 feet away, him shouting, "Y'all know what the fuck needs to happen." You know, that speaks volumes. And again, I'm on, we don't pick sides in this thing, but I guess I am. I like, LeBron's got every reason to be wanting them to be banging down doors and improving this team. Now let's bring in the one, the only, Fred Katz. Thank you for joining us. What trap are we falling into, Mr. Katz?
You seem like you're buying in on the Lakers. And
no, I'm not saying no.
I'm selling the West stock. I'm selling West.
Here's my that's fine. Here is my existential Lakers question. They're playing way better. LeBron has been totally insane. He's averaging his age since he turned 38, which is a ridiculous thing to say. He has been on a whole other level, and he should be on an All-NBA team and all that stuff, and I'm with you. Like, when you're that great, no matter how much of a role he played in building the actual roster, and we can debate about how much of a role he played some role in filling out the actual roster. No matter what role he played, like, you're 38, you're that great, you're still that great, you're allowed to feel frustrated by being on a losing team. They've won 5 in a row, but the existential Lakers question is, okay, well, what's that really mean? Does it mean that it's worth trading your only two tradable future first round picks to get better? Because as Sam, as you said, they're not going to win the West. So if they're not going to win the West, you're trading away your entire future to not win the West. And if you're not doing that, are you doing some sort of shuffling the deck chairs trade, which isn't going to do anything by definition? Are you trading one pick and splitting it down the middle? But that seems like,
is
honestly
it really,
the worst option.
I think what I'm hearing, and I would love to drill down a little farther on this, do you and you other guys, do you feel like where do you fall on the question of the all or nothing calculus that seems to be part of how the Lakers brass is looking at it? Meaning, if you are unofficially convinced that you're not going to win a championship, does that thereby mean you hold on to the picks? Because I think the other night, and I might have been a prisoner of the moment. I mean, I was really marveling at how great LeBron was in that Kings game. And just the idea that somebody, man, I forget who said this, but somebody recently, high profile, had said that it's no longer a debate, you know, who is the greatest player of all time in terms of the back end of their career. Nobody's ever been this good, this long, this late. And I went naturally to look at Kareem's career and, you know, 20 years, all-time scoring leader. And it's like, well, as far as Kareem goes, like at the age of 38, he was averaging, I think, 22 points a game. And the next year fell off to 14. So that argument holds up. But, you know, anyway, marveling at how great LeBron has been this year and probably going towards the side of thinking, even if they don't win the whole thing, I think you got to go kind of guns blazing at the back end and see where it takes you rather than just keeping those picks on the sideline and having almost like the Kobe ending where it's just non-competitive, chasing records, you know, a lot of pomp and circumstance, but no real competition.
I mean, I guess here's what I would say.
Oh, John, go ahead.
I would say this, like, I don't think that they should trade the picks just for the sake of trading them. I mean, we have to kind of know what their options are in terms of what deals presented are there for these picks. Because, you know, if you can get a player that comes available that really does solve a lot of their issues, then, you know, then you say, yes, you go for it. But if it's just to, you know, kind of, just bring in someone who's marginally better than what they have right now. And yeah, that's probably not the way to go. But I do think that the other part of this is that when you get into business with LeBron James, you understand that it's for the here and now. Like, yeah, I know he signed the long contract and everything, but
it's he's not 38 that long.
Years old, and you have to get what you can out of him while you have him available. And these picks are valuable, but they're also just picks right now. And they could turn into nobodies. The Lakers could just as easily flub those picks in a couple of years. And then they'd be without any kind of championship for LeBron other than the one that they got and with bad players. So I'm just of the mind of you. I don't think you close the door on anything. I think you try and make moves. Be aggressive with it. If it's not there, you don't force it. But man, you have LeBron James still at an incredibly high level right now in a wide open West. So I'd be leaning more toward go for it than not.
You can also make a trade that is more forward looking than like the next couple months. You know, let's say I'm not saying he's available or this is on the table, but if you got a Bogdanović from Detroit, like he's under contract for a couple of years where you're going to have Davis, you're going to have LeBron the next couple of years. If you got a Kuzma back, you could re-sign him. You know what I mean? You could fit puzzle pieces together that aren't just about like, we're obsessed with winning it this year. And if not, it's being blown up. Like you need to be building a core for the next couple seasons around these guys, because this is your core, right? I mean, you're still going to try to win next season with AD and LeBron, I assume.
No, agreed. Agreed. I mean, we'll see where that goes. It's funny too, John. You mentioned Bogdanović, you know, the Jazz version. You know, I look at the other Bogdanović too. The Hawks, who are an interesting team right now, you know, underperforming, bunch of talent, new front office. You know, the other Bogdanović comes to mind too. A lot of teams would love to get in on him. All right, let's pivot and at least go broader scope. So, Lakers, like Fred said, we're getting fined by the second right now for talking too much Lakers. Those are his rules. But the West in general, John, your Minnesota Timberwolves have been nothing if not compelling this year.
Scorching.
You know what I mean?
Scorching.
Scorching. But it's a roller coaster. You know, it's four in a row at the moment. They get to kind of bathe in that winning streak until they play Wednesday at Detroit. So that's another very gettable game. Then at home, gettable game against Phoenix, at home against Cleveland, Utah. So kind of found their way, you know, clearly inspired by the pros and analysis of John Krasinski as he talked about Rudy Gobert's struggles. And you've had some pretty open discussions with Rudy in media sessions where, you know, you've kind of pressed him to unpack his own challenges. And he's been fairly forthcoming, I think, and fairly kind of look in the mirror style and you know, has played a little better of late. Where are we at with this team that obviously still know Karl Anthony Towns and like the Lakers, like where they're not dead yet. They're in this, you know, they can make some noise. They can make a run. How are things in that part of the league?
Yeah, it's been interesting to see it all play out, because obviously when you pay the price that they paid for Rudy Gobert, there is an expectation that they were going to come in and be a team that won around 50 games and challenged for a four seed or really were going to be a factor in how in the West in some way, you know, maybe not, you know, winning a bunch of series in the playoffs or anything, but the goal was to get back to the playoffs and be there without being in the play-in. They started the season very underwhelming. The Towns Gobert fit was clunky, and there's a lot of angst kind of surrounding this team. And then Towns gets hurt, and they're just sort of in a free fall. You know, you called the win or the game against Detroit, you know, one they should win, and you're right, but they lost to Detroit at the back end of a 6-game losing streak at home. So they've been very underwhelming that way. But since that loss to Detroit, they seem to have found some sort of identity, and Gobert has really started to settle in a little bit more. I don't think he was comfortable in this new system. I don't think he was comfortable after leaving the only franchise he's ever been with to come to a whole new place and play an unconventional style. And you could see that in his play. And over the last three games in particular, he's been really, really good. And, you know, 25 and 21 against the Clippers. You know, he was good in the second, really good in the second half last night against Houston. And now they're a half game out of the sixth seed, and they're a game and a half out of the five seed. And so a lot of the panicking that was happening earlier in the season has settled down a little bit, and they feel like if they can keep climbing up, keep stacking some wins while some of the teams like the Clippers, like the Suns, free fall in front of them, the Jazz and Blazers are seemingly falling out of it. They feel like they're in good position, but they certainly have a long way to go to find more continuity in what they have. But it's looking a lot better today than it was even 10 days ago.
John, have they learned anything with Towns out? Like, Gobert has absolutely looked better lately, mm-hmm. like you just said. But ultimately, that doesn't really matter if he doesn't continue to look this good once Towns is back. And as you just said, they really struggled to create any sort of comfort level when they were together. And ultimately, if you want to win at a high level, you need to be able to have your best players on the floor as much as possible. Have they learned anything about Gobert that would be specific to him playing next to Towns during this time that Towns has been hurt?
Yeah, I think the one, there's two things that come to mind. First of all, when Towns comes back, I think you'll see him used differently in terms of much more of a floor spacer and a shooter and less of a creator than he was in the first 19 games before he was hurt. Because I do think that between Towns, Edwards, Russell, and even, you know, with Gobert in there, they had a hard time breathing some space into the offense with so many different people who wanted the ball in their hands a lot. And so I think that Towns will kind of come back and be much more of a shooter than the creator that he was. And that might help the offense a little bit. Defensively, it's still going to be a struggle, but I think the really the big overall thing that they have learned over these past 20 games or so is that it's got to be Anthony Edwards' show. Like, this is no longer Ant's kind of sitting on the wing and waiting for the ball to come to him. You put it in his hands, like they put it in Luka's hands, like they put it in Harden's hands, like they put it in all these main playmakers' hands. And then you live with some of the mistakes he's going to make at 21 years old, but you benefit more greatly from him taking control of the offense, getting to the bucket, driving and kicking, scoring, hitting three-pointers, things like that. And so it's become much more of an Edwards-centric team, which is probably where it needs to go eventually in the next couple of years, but that's been expedited with Towns out.
John, you alluded to it earlier, excuse me, but can you please pull the curtain back a little bit on these past couple of months, as it relates to, I think you used the word panic, as it relates to just the kind of the mood in Minnesota? Because, you know, your stories have certainly conveyed the up and down nature of things, but I just wonder if you contextualize stuff here for a moment. That Gobert trade, obviously, last summer, the biggest move of the offseason, Tim Connelly coming over from Denver, makes a big splash. And then since then, not surprisingly, like in front office circles all around the league, there's been this just like obvious sense of like, my gosh, like, okay, you got paid to go to Minnesota. It's a fantastic opportunity. But in terms of reputational stuff, you know, I can't remember a move. I mean, and I'm having recency bias here, but in terms of moves that ran the risk of kind of identifying an executive's reputation, the Gobert one was one of those. And so there's so much on the line. And, you know, and then you've got the new ownership transition, if you will, happening. And but the panic aspect of it, you know, how have they navigated all of it, and what has the mood been?
Yeah, I mean, it's been tough. I mean, the entire league doesn't believe it's going to work. There's been skepticism the whole way through. And I do think that the way that Rudy was playing early in the season, a lot of turnovers, he seemed slow-footed coming out of Eurobasket. He was getting outplayed, frankly, by like Orlando Robinson in Miami one night. And you're looking at this and you're not just saying, okay, they overpaid for a star, but it was looking like they overpaid for someone who is on the downside of his career. And oh, by the way, Walker Kessler is blocking every shot in the world in Utah. And it was looking really bad. And I think like one of the other parts of it was because Rudy was not playing well, I think some of his teammates looked at him and was like, man, what's this all about? He's making all this money. We paid all of this freight to get him here, and he can't catch a pass, and he's not dunking the ball. Like, what is going on? And so there was a lot of internal sort of dynamics of what did we get here? And that's from the players, not from the coaches, not from the front office. I think they always believed that he would eventually settle in and start to assert himself. But for a while, there was real frustration with how everything was fitting together and how he was playing. Over the last probably 3 weeks or so, he's starting to do more and show some of the Rudy Gobert stuff that you see, that you saw in Utah, and really controlling the defense, starting to finish pick and rolls a lot with a lot more force, blocking shots, doing those things. And so it's definitely settled down a little bit, but it's by no means a point of, yep, everything is fine here, nothing to worry about, we're going to be great. There's still a lot of trust that's being built and chemistry that is being worked on right now. It's a big long process that I think has taken longer than some people would have liked.
Well, and that locker room aspect to me is interesting. I had somebody tell me a while back about that locker room that, and this is a compliment to Austin Rivers and a mm-hmm. criticism of everybody else, was that like Austin was the only guy with any leadership ability in that group. And he was a talker and a communicator. And you know, that's a guy who I glanced at the box. He played 19 minutes last night. Like, he's part of the rotation. He's, mm-hmm. but like, you know, that's Rudy, part of his career and part of his legacy, I think, that is always kind of bubbled beneath the surface, is that personality wise, and it's not just cultural, but you know, you have the cultural stuff, you have the personality stuff. You know, we know the backstory with he and Donovan Mitchell in Utah, and where at times it was not great at all, at times it was bad, at times it was good, but like sometimes has struggled to truly connect with his teammates, and to have to do that while struggling, you know, after this type of a massive trade, I'm sure was incredibly challenging for him. So, you know, I think what you're also saying is that component is still worth watching going forward.
For sure. Yeah. He's still, he's for as veteran as he is and how many accomplishments as he has individually, the defensive players of the year and the all-stars and stuff like that, he's not a guy who's going to get into the middle of the locker room and like command respect and unite and stuff. He's quiet. Like, he does things his own way. And so I do think that there is a familiarity that needs to be kind of gained between him and his teammates. And it's been better of late. But the thing that he has to do is he may be quiet as a player, but he needs to play loudly. And, you know, you hear all the time about, well, in Utah, he did all the little things to bring a team together to give them regular season success, you know, all the things that don't show up in the box score. But when you're in a new environment and when you're trying to build trust and respect with your new teammates, you have to do loud things. You have to swat a shot into the third row. You have to dunk on someone.
Just flex more. He should flex more.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think that he is starting to show a little bit more of that. And I think the players are starting to respond. But for a long time, it was, hey, what's this guy bringing to the table? And and so I think it's coming around. But yes,
so more like, shit talking, more flexing.
Yeah, a little more swag. Like that's what
more swag.
That's what Anthony Edwards wants. That's what D'Angelo Russell wants. That's what a lot of these guys want, is they want to see this big $40 million center get out and just, you know, and dominate someone. And
they want Pat Bev channeling, or exactly. Rudy channeling Pat Bev. There you
exactly.
go.
Exactly.
No, Anthony Edwards wants Kristaps Porzingis.
Yeah, right.
That's,
ooh,
what, right.
That's what he wants.
Mm-hmm. That's having a
hey, John, I have a question for you.
Yes.
What the hell was Naz Reid talking about?
So for those who aren't aware, after the Detroit loss, Naz was asked, is it a mystery why you guys are struggling? Have you had a hard time putting your finger on it? And Naz said, no, we know what it is. We know the problem. We know the problem. We're going to keep that in house. And, it sounds more ominous when you read it on a sheet of paper than when he said it. It was more of like, we understand nothing is wrong, nothing is over here, we can fix this, is what he was saying. But when you read it, it's like, oh, he's pointing a finger. And I do think that there is something to him saying, you know, it's a little Rudy related in terms of, hey, we got to figure out this Gobert thing or else this whole thing is going to fall apart. There's just no way going around it. I also think at the time, D'Angelo Russell was not playing particularly well. And it was, hey, we got to figure out how to get Russell more comfortable and to kind of run an offense that can function with both Russell and Gobert, because D'Angelo Russell doesn't want to pass to Rudy Gobert right now because he doesn't catch the ball when he throws it there. So it's kind of like, I think a lot of people thought he was saying Rudy Gobert is the problem. I just don't want to tell you it. And I don't think it was that emphatic, but I do think it was a full acknowledgement that what they are having right now wasn't working. And there's not going to be huge material changes. They might make a trade here or there. That's a little tweak, but they're going to go forward with Karl-Anthony Towns, Rudy Gobert, Anthony Edwards, probably D'Angelo Russell. And so they have to figure this thing out as is, because no changes, no help is coming around the corner to fix things that way.
I do have one more for you, which I'm fascinated by the Wolves. What a weird team.
They
what
are
a strange
weird.
Team that we still haven't seen. We're all crapping on Gobert, which I hate because I've offset that Gobert is the most unfairly crapped on player in the league, and now we're doing it. But this year, the blocks are way down. Opponents are shooting 57% on dunks and layups when he's the closest defender, which is not a bad percentage, but it's nowhere near peak Gobert. Gobert is normally amongst the league leaders there, and like the best version of Rudy Gobert is like allowing 40 high 40s shooting, 10 points lower, 47, 48, 49 on dunks and layups when he's the closest defender there. Now he's almost at 60. Those numbers can mislead a little bit, but you watch with the eye test and you're like, he's not altering as many shots. He's not getting up there. How concerned are the Wolves that the best version of Gobert is behind him, independent of fit or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's a concern now. I think it's been alleviated a little bit by his better play of late, but certainly, you know, a month ago, especially, there was real concern about it because he was slow-footed. Like he was slower to react. He was not playing, you know, we saw him in Utah be able to guard both the ball handler and the roller in a pick and roll by himself. And he couldn't do that anymore. And so There have been various theories about it. One is I do think that Eurobasket took a lot out of him, and I think that he came in tired, and he's just now kind of getting his legs back underneath him. But I do think also he's more tentative because he's playing a different system of defense. He's not playing as much drop coverage with the Wolves as he did in Utah because the Wolves' other defenders are not as equipped to play that style. And so that's been an adjustment for him. I think that the rest of the team has had a hard time kind of learning him and helping him as much as he is supposed to help them. So there's various reasons, but there is no question. And Rudy just said it this last weekend, is that we haven't seen the best Rudy Gobert yet because he hasn't been as impactful. Like, it's not just that the numbers aren't really saying it. You just watch him play, and for a lot of this season, it's not been the same Rudy Gobert. He's not been a very good player. So there has been concern. I think that there is wishful thinking and hope that he is starting to come around and settle in and be more impactful, which he has been in the last four or five games. But yeah, there was real kind of teeth gnashing about, hey, what's going on with this guy? Like, where is he? And now he's starting to show up. And so there's hope that he's going to kind of carry this forward.
All right. Good stuff, JK. We are going to take a quick break on the other side. And I was a little delayed and slow in sharing the other news of the day. Kevin Durant, Nets star, Nets are surging, has been diagnosed with an isolated MCL sprain of his right knee. Will be reevaluated in 2 weeks. So let's use that on the other side of this break to check out the East a little bit, but with the same theme. You know, the Nets were surging, but a bunch of teams that are kind of playing middling basketball that makes the entire league so interesting right now from a parity standpoint. So we will be right back to jump to the other side.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's the butterfly effect for real.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
All right, gentlemen, appreciate you. Let's keep it rolling here. Other news of the day, Kevin Durant playing his tail off, playing MVP caliber basketball. Injuries suck. There's no other way of saying it. They're part of the game. But this is unfortunate. I mean, thankfully, you know, could have been worse. Like I said, on the other side of the break, going to get reevaluated in 2 weeks. But the Nets, you know, as we kind of look around the league's landscape trying to figure out who's for real and who's really dangerous, you know, a handful of teams have had their time in that spotlight, if that makes sense. But the Nets were the latest one. And they were only one game, as we talked now, out of the top of the East. They're about to, you know, be on top of this conference with the best record in the league after a start that was, you know, really, really subpar on the floor and chaotic off the floor with the Kyrie Irving saga and everything in the summer with Kevin Durant. So, yeah, I mean, how does this impact things, not just for the Nets, but for the power structure, if you will, of the contenders?
I think that it's different than last year. Remember when he went down last year and they were like kind of in the middle of the pack and they really fell off a cliff and they ended up having to like chase just to get into the play-in. They got in the play-in, they played their way out of the play-in, but they match up with Boston in the first round. I mean, that killed them. They're 27, let me look right now, 27-13. And I just think they've given themselves enough cushion. You mentioned how it doesn't sound too bad. Like, you know, just to say reevaluated in 2 weeks means like they kind of seem to think this is a more minor sprain. As long as Kyrie Irving and the rest of that group, which has played well together, can like keep it somewhat stable, get enough wins, you know, you don't have to go 8-2 over the next 10, but go 4-6. I think right. They'll be okay.
Right. Well, and you talk about narratives and subplots and things that could unfold, and you kind of just alluded to it. You know, the what if Kyrie leads this group without Durant and plays at that kind of a level and keeps them afloat, that'll be quite the turn of events considering how his season began.
Yeah, and they've got a pretty easy schedule coming up. Like, you know, 5 of their next 6 games or, you know, 6 of their next 8 are against teams that are either hovering around 500 or worse. So they've got a manageable schedule coming up. And, man, because of all the drama that surrounded him this year, I don't think people realize how incredible of a season Kyrie Irving is having.
Right.
He's been unbelievable and all-star worthy. I don't really think you can make a basketball argument for him not to be in the All-Star game this year. He's capable of carrying that team offensively. I mean, the thing with KD that I wonder is, look, KD, in my opinion, is an easy top 5 MVP guy right now. And I think he's got an MVP argument. And their offense has been 11 points per 100 better when he's on the floor, which is a massive difference. But he's also been one of their most important defenders, too, on a team that has played much better defensively during this hot streak that they're on, but still like has personnel flaws out there. And losing KD as just like a weak side defender, as somebody who can switch onto anybody, is a really meaningful thing too. Everybody concentrates on the fact that he's like the greatest scorer we've ever seen, but he's been quite good defensively this year too.
Step up, Ben Simmons.
Just make sure that Ben doesn't make a free throw, right, Fred? When he makes a free throw, they're like 1-7. So as long as they don't do that, they're good. Yeah. So as long as they don't do that, he doesn't
do that. How
about
the fact that they've only played 8 games that he's actually made a free throw?
That's right, exactly. That shouldn't be hard to pull off.
I was trying to pull this number up here because, Fred, you mentioned the Nets defense, and I think I finally got it. All right, so since November 17th, Ben Simmons has been in and out a bit during that early stretch, but November 17th, they were 6-9. They have the 6th best defensive rating in the NBA. So that also, as an offshoot of that, kind of makes me think about Jacques Vaughn. I mean, the coaching change from Steve Nash to Jacques Vaughn, you know, coach of the year is going to be an interesting debate once we get to that point. I think Jacques Vaughn, if this trend continues, especially if they do find a way to flourish without KD, I think Jacques ends up getting a lot of well-deserved credit.
The top two in coach of the year, it's possible, are going to be guys who at one point this season had an interim tag with him and Joe Mazzulla.
Sure.
Like it is supremely possible that those guys are top two in coach of the year right now. Yeah, he's he's been great. Nick Claxton, by the way, has been really good for them defensively. He can get muscled a little bit, but they use him to switch, and he's been really good around the rim. And he I think he's really improved defensively this year. He's been really, really big for them as well.
How about Willie Green's in New Orleans? I like him above those two right now, personally.
Yeah, Willie Green's great. Definitely up there.
Yep.
Unpack that a little bit, Slater. We're not going to go all the way on Coach of the Year right now, but I didn't see that coming.
Well, I just wanted to say one more thing about Durant. Kind of from local perspective, you know, me and Sam out here, they're playing the Warriors in Golden State in 13 days, you know, which is doing the math. You know, he will be out. He has still not played in front of fans since he left the Warriors. 2019, leaves the Warriors. The only game he's played in Chase Center was COVID year. You know, there's the famous picture with, you know, they had brought the banners down. It's like a full empty arena. But it's just, they want to give him the trivia video. They want to give him the standing ovation. And it's like going to end up being like, you know, post-retirement at this point. It's just, he keeps weirdly missing those games. And obviously, like, it's unfortunate and it's not purposeful, but it's just, he's going to miss it again. I mean, I think people around here were looking forward to it a little bit because there is much different than Oklahoma City, a more like positive, welcoming, waiting him. He's just never going to receive it, it seems like.
What does all this mean? I know we were talking about the teams in the middle, but since we hit on the next, or Nets, title contenders, guys, like the general question of, as we get towards mid-January, and we're going to have a lot of movement over the course of the next month, I had started kind of believing like, damn, I think the Nets, I mean, they look capable of winning the whole thing, which would, you know, not something I would have said 6 weeks before. And we already kind of, you know, shared our skepticism about the West, you know, and I was around Denver recently. I respect them. They don't have the pedigree to this point in terms of, you know, having proven to be a championship group. And the Nets certainly haven't either, but they have, you know, one, you know, two-time champion leading the way when Kevin gets back. Denver's talented. I'm not ready to say, oh, they're going to be, you know, raising that trophy in the Mile High City. In terms of title contenders and teams that, you know, you can envision the combination of kind of chance and them taking advantage of opportunity leading to a title, who do you believe in right now?
Well, at the start of the season, I took Bucks over Denver. That was my pick. And I know the Bucks have looked shaky, and I certainly like what I've seen from the Nets more this season, maybe even the Celtics too, than what Milwaukee has, even though they haven't had Middleton for a lot of the season. I still might lean ever so slightly toward Milwaukee in the playoffs with Giannis and Middleton that way. But I do like Denver. I know they have defensive issues, and I think that they'll probably try to address that before the trade deadline. I think they can make a move to do it, but if they can shore up their defense a little bit more, maybe add some bench help. I like Denver in the West a lot. And I mean, Golden State too, if Steph is healthy and everything kind of clicks into place, but Denver is just, that's a team that I've liked a lot. I like their coaching staff. I love Jokic, and I think everything works around them. So I'm going to still ride with my guys.
I believe in nobody in the West, Sam. That's why I opened the podcast the whole being like, you know what? Trade, Lakers, go ahead. I don't know. The West is.
All right, what about the East, though? I'm saying league-wide. Yeah.
Boston, Milwaukee, you know. I believers.
Okay.
I think
no Cleveland, no Philly?
No.
Definitely not Philly.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm like conference finals like believers in second team, Cleveland.
Second round and out, like just built to.
I think Cleveland is insanely good, like really good.
Fred. You guys know. I don't believe you.
Talking about Cleveland, but it's really hard for a young team to go from, no matter what move they make in the offseason leading up to it, it's really hard for a young team to go from not even in the playoffs to going and winning a title. I mean, the Suns kind of made that jump that year. They went to the finals a couple of years ago. The 08 Celtics, I guess, did it, but that doesn't really count.
You just call the Chris Paul-led Suns young?
Yeah, I guess not. But yeah. I mean, I'm just accounting for the fact that I said almost no matter what trade they made. Well, but they were young than Paul, you know?
West skepticism aside, how do you feel about the young but not as young Memphis Grizzlies?
I feel great about the Memphis
Grizzlies.
Love
the Grizzlies.
They
championship
are making
love?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yes. They are because they're not jumping from, you know, no playoffs or something like that.
Right.
Like they have put in their legs, right? They played the Warriors in the play-in tournament, and then they come on and they win a playoff series last year against Minnesota, and they fight Golden State hard when Ja gets hurt in the playoffs. And I think this year this team is even better. They've barely had their healthy team for pretty much the whole season. Desmond Bane has been hurt for most of the season. Jaren Jackson Jr. started the season sidelined. I think Jaren Jackson Jr. should be the favorite for Defensive Player of the Year right now.
No doubt.
That dude is out of this world. That stat I just cited for Rudy Gobert, by the way, where opponents are shooting 57% against Gobert on layups and dunks when Gobert is the closest defender. Jaren Jackson, normally the number that leads the league is like in the high 40s in that for qualifying players. Jaren Jackson Jr., when I checked like 2 days ago, was at 39%.
Just stop fouling people, Jaren Jackson.
That's where my skepticism with them remains, and maybe remains a little too colored from the Christmas game where they came in against
the Warriors guy. Here he comes.
Well, but Sam, I mean, did you go to the game? Well, regardless, you watched the game. Like, they still overly confident and make silly mistakes, and to me, they just still don't have like the veteran.
Overly confident. What yes. in the world gives you that idea?
And by the way, I think I could loop John into this. He was at that first round series last year. Like, yeah. They just make silly mistakes.
They should have lost that series if the Wolves were capable at all. They would have lost that series.
Jaren Jackson's fouls in that game. It was like Draymond Green knew coming out of halftime he had 3 fouls, and he was like, you know what I'm going to do? Jaren Jackson's going to get close to me. He's going to stick his arm way too close, and I'm going to run into it and get his 4th foul and send him to the bench. And he just did it because he's like, that was easy. And it's just that type of stuff that I still remain like, eh.
I mean,
they were supposed to come in there on Christmas and make a statement.
It makes sense, but they're also in a position where they've got assets loaded up. They've got too many players to play in a rotation. They could easily make some sort of consolidation trade using Danny Green, a young guy, a draft pick, and try to put together a really nice rotation player. Like they could be a team that should go out and get one of the Bogdanoviches, right?
Sure.
Like that would make a lot of sense for them.
They never do, though. Maybe they will, but like I feel
they
like
never
they
do.
I mean, and I
but
saw
that's
them.
Because they never felt like they were at the level where like they could make a run. I think they feel like this is
hey, if that
legitimately
happens,
really
that
good team right now.
The equation.
I mean, they've also done a nice. I saw them last month and talked to some of their people, and admittedly, you know, was struck by this internal confidence that exists with some of their homegrown guys, and specifically, like, you know, Santi Aldama is a guy that, you know, nobody really knew going into the year and then has turned into a good player for them. And they're trying to build from the inside out, but always with an eye on that move that is worth putting your assets on the table for. So they are not only well-positioned to compete in the playoffs and contend for that title now, but still, you know, have a ton of flexibility. I think I've told this story before on the pod, but it's worth repeating because it just always cracked me up. In terms of their confidence that we joked about, it's like, you know, they lose to the Warriors in the playoffs. And John, I think the other two guys have already heard this story, but I guess for you, I'm sitting in the post-game press conference room, series is over, Warriors win. I think it's Dylan Brooks on the podium, and he's asked about whether or not he thought that the Warriors' veteran experience and just their history was the type of thing that put them over the top in this series. And when that question was asked of Dylan, I'm literally sitting next to Jaren Jackson Jr., who had chosen to come sit among the press corps, you know, for that presser. And it was just, he's in his jersey, he's chilling, and he's watching Dylan's presser. And the question comes Dylan's way. And Jaren, you know, Dylan is the one we're used to having all the swag, all the edge, all the everything. But Jaren's reaction to the question always stuck with me and I thought was hilarious because he heard that question and like audibly gasped and was like, pshaw, no, you know, like they, and at first you're going, okay, you're wrong. I don't agree with you. But over time, that sort of belief, like I'm here for it. Like it, That's kind of what pumps through their veins.
It makes for riveting theater.
Yeah.
But it's like, at some point, you got to learn from your mistakes. And that,
can you do both? Like, can you have that energy and then
I
and
thought
then
so,
the
but
scenes,
then I watched the
both?
Christmas game and I was like, this doesn't look like a team that is learning from its mistakes.
Sure.
I don't know if I agree. I think if you look at the big picture, a lot of their guys are getting, like Desmond Bane is so much better. That dude is just one of the 5 best overall shooters in the NBA now. and is so much better and is so much better at creating his own shot. Jaws added a jump shot and is somehow better than he was last year when he, as Sam Amick deemed him, won most improved player, even though he shouldn't have won most improved player because he was too good.
Taken strays. Jeez.
No, that wasn't a stray. That was a direct shot. Okay. That wasn't a stray at all.
It was
that
a
was a you go missed. Out of my way.
You missed. You
direct shot. Yeah.
Just
because you haven't Venmo'd me.
Yeah, that was not yes. stray. That wasn't yes. accidental.
It, yeah, it's not a stray when I walk right up to you. And
okay,
I just take out my knife.
No gun talk. We're not doing gun talk. Keep it moving.
This is what's going to happen until you just Venmo me all the fine money.
How about a Dylan Brooks upgrade, though? You know, maybe yes. using him, his salary, the fact they can't extend him because, you know, just the
I don't think there's any way. They love that dude so much. I mean,
is that smart, though?
I don't know. I mean, I love his comment recently where he's talking about his shot selection and basically was like, they're going to have to deal. Like, I do a lot for this team.
Well, you know, not to get too deep into it, but Dylan Brooks shot them out of a couple playoff games when I continue to say, do you learn from your mistakes?
He did.
And then you hear these quotes like,
he's passing better lately. He's passing better. He also had a quote recently where he was talking about like, hey, I'm passing more. And he was kind of bragging
about
that
was the
fact
one.
That, like for three straight games, he passed more. Yeah, here's the thing. Everybody looks at the Grizzlies and is like, can they upgrade Dylan Brooks' role? And maybe they can. Brooks is expiring. Maybe they just want to see if they can move on from him. But like, they really love him. I was talking to, because I was doing a Quentin Grimes.
Yeah. Thunder really love Russell Westbrook. And Russell Westbrook had these determined quotes after every playoff elimination that he was not going to change his ways.
That's terrible. We're talking about role players here.
I mean, but also, it's just
when we talk about loving him, it goes beyond the cultural stuff. So I was doing a story on Quentin Grimes like a week and a half ago. And for the story, I wanted to see, because it feels like the Knicks just put him now on whoever is the other team's best player, whether it's a wing, whether it's a guard, whatever. So I hit up somebody who works in analytics for another team, and I asked them, because I know teams track this stuff, how many guys in the league guard the other team's most used player a higher percentage of the time than Quentin Grimes? And Quentin Grimes was sixth in the league guarding the most used player on the other team. And you know who was first? Dylan Brooks. Because Memphis trusts him so much defensively. They are putting him on the other team's most used player more than any other player in the NBA is on the other team's most used player when they're on the floor. I mean, that they would have to really reconfigure the way that they play defense, and their defense is very good, if they were to get rid of Dylan Brooks. I'm not saying they're not going to. They totally might. I'm just saying they will not part with him as easily as you would. That's all.
Fair.
I just Slater. Man, Slater, you just missed it. The pitch just went right by. It was like a 92
I was
going to
say, yeah, sure, Dylan Brooks gets a steal, and then he's like, and I think I'm going to pull up for 28 feet right now. but, you know, whatever. I do think that is a place, if you can get an upgrade.
We're going to promote this part of the pod and just sell, you know, we're going to, Slater, I apologize in advance, because we're going to frame this like the Warriors guy goes at the Grizzlies, so the Grizzlies can lean
add fuel to the fire.
It's going to get played in Memphis.
Hey, by the way,
I will never see that in comment.
Please do
it,
not do that, because I'm not believing in the Warriors much right now.
All right.
Which continues along Slater the lines of my theme of the podcast is I don't believe in anybody in the West. So maybe Memphis can win it, because literally somebody has to win the West.
Well, now we're going to get you in trouble with the Warriors fans. Don't believe in the Warriors. Giving up on the Warriors. I don't know why I'm picking on you now. All right. I will keep it moving. Guys, I do want to get John out of here.
Sam just got cyberbullying in his blood.
LeBron
right
got
now.
Him, so he wants, the energy's he wants Draymond coming out. And Ja to go after
oh
Slater.
Oh, my gosh. Yep, and I will say, it's funny you mentioned that, like, it is wild. And I'm actually weirdly proud of myself, because, like, it's not that hard to just stop listening. The internet's the internet. But, like, man, that 24 hours of the LeBron machine coming my way from a digital social media standpoint is something else. And there's a greater conversation there about like society and how it's just not the healthiest thing. Like, just people wild and they're saying stuff you would never say in person. It's just unbelievable. So that channel of my brain has been cut off at the moment, but maybe I am taking that out on Slater. Before we get out, because it's like we are kind of in trade season, and we are going to wrap up here, so we're not going too deep, but you know, I guess thoughts for next week to set the stage for trade discussion and how you guys feel like this season is going to go. You've got, I mentioned it earlier, just it seems like what I think are going to be so many buyers and so many teams with hope. The play-in tournament obviously impacts that, you know, inevitably. And then just the way this season has unfolded, you know, everybody I talk to around the league is just like, it's just, you know, 90% of the league is buyers. So where are these players going to come from? How do you guys see that?
If I'm a team right now, in contention, I just don't understand why Malik Beasley isn't like at the top of everyone's list. I mean, he has some issues you have concern about maybe character wise, but when you get a guy shooting like that, and the difference that he can make, that's the guy that any team that has a wish to go deeper into the playoffs should be going after. And I do think that Utah looks like it's starting to fall out. And yeah, I think Danny will make some moves. And so Malik would be right at the top of that list for me.
My understanding on the Utah front, you know, Larry Markkanen is part of their future. He's not a guy you can talk about trade-wise. And then, you know, John's favorite contextual reference for Rudy Gobert struggles, Walker Kessler is another guy that they love. But by and large, beyond that, everything's up for grabs.
Danny's the
kind of guy who interesting, might Sam?
Move quick. Sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Slater.
Oh, Fred, you're up.
You know what's interesting? You mentioned how people are talking about, well, there just aren't that many sellers in the league. People were saying the same stuff going up to last year, right? And then all of a sudden at the last second, some teams are like, actually, you know what? I think we'll sell. I think right now what the play-in tournament has done is that it's really hard to consider yourself a definitive seller in the beginning of January. I think teams are just deciding that they're sellers later than they were previously because they're still kind of in the hunt for 10. But I could easily see Chicago deciding to sell. That's a possibility. I could see Atlanta deciding to sell. I think that's a possibility. I think Washington deciding to is a possibility. Toronto deciding to is a possibility. Utah deciding to is a possibility. So like we're seeing,
a stronger whole lot than of others. Good players like, on those teams too.
Sam, I think we need a segment every week for the next four, whatever, until the deadline where Fred Katz does an update on the Jakob Poeltl sweepstakes. Cause like, is that not the name of the deadline, Fred Katz? Like, where are we at on the Poeltl sweepstakes?
Oh, it's enthralling stuff.
Denver, maybe.
Is he going to Poeltl
as a backup? Brooklyn? Are you going to allow that, Katz? What's he going to play 12 minutes a game behind Jokic? He can't
best backup
that.
In the NBA. No way. No way. 48 minutes. Bring him around. No, yeah, I'll be the first to admit it. He has not quite been the same Jakob Poeltl this year because the Spurs just don't have the defenders to prop him up. He hasn't quite been the same.
He's got to get propped up. Okay.
Quinn is good. Yeah. Well, he can prop up others when you prop up him too, but, he just hasn't quite been the same. There are just guys beelining into the paint on the Spurs right now. And it's a difficult job. I'm not totally completely ruling out the Spurs not trading him, by the way. Everyone just assumes the Spurs are definitely trading him.
I agree.
I don't know. Spurs love
He likes Poeltl. It there.
Spurs love Poeltl more than I do.
Allegedly.
Last thing I heard is they were looking for like a legit first rounder, like a, you know, we're talking like lottery type first rounder.
Yeah, I believe that.
And now I think Slater's part of their
just picking on Katz because I came at him. I see how this goes.
Part of their, negotiation is what Fred is saying. Like, we'll re-sign him.
Sure. All right, I'm going to use that as my out, gentlemen, because I can relate to Jakob Poeltl because y'all prop me up and you make me better, and I appreciate you. I'm also the type of big who needs to get propped up. All 6'1", 185 of me. All right, guys, appreciate you. John, thank you for coming on, man. I know you are in high demand all the time and you're busy and work and family and all that stuff. So thank you so much. Great seeing your face. Fred, Slater, love y'all. Talk to you guys next week. Thank you.